And on we go. There are a handful of classic stories about connection that feature a human and not a human. Charlotte's Web, Babe, and a beautifully shot Oscar-nominated BAFTA-winning film joins this club. My octopus teacher tells the story of Craig Foster, a South African filmmaker and conservationist who was burned out. He needed some time and space to re-identify his purpose and find a new direction in life. As part of his healing process, he decides to take daily dives to a kelp forest near his home. And it's there that Craig befriends and films an octopus. This octopus is wary of Craig at first, but after a while, she becomes comfortable with having him around, even seeming to enjoy his company, latching onto his hands or his chest. Craig visits her day after day, capturing breathtaking footage of this octopus on the hunt, being attacked by sharks, and even seemingly to play with a school of fish. But the octopus has a short lifespan, only a little over a year. And so Craig knows from the very beginning that his days with her are numbered. Co-director Pippa Ehrlich, a diver and conservationist herself, came on to help turn hours and hours of raw footage into a stunning narrative film. She joins me now to discuss My Octopus Teacher, which has been nominated for an Oscar in the Best Documentary Feature category, and it just won the BAFTA for Best Documentary. Pippa, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So exciting. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. When did you first learn about Craig and this daily ritual of visiting this same spot and this octopus?
I met Craig through a mutual friend called Ross Freilich. They co-founded an organization called the Sea Change Project together. And one evening, Ross and I were at a work event, actually, because he runs a surf film festival, and I worked for a conservation organization that sponsored the festival. And he showed me this incredible photograph, and it was a photograph of a Sard Bushman painting, and it's a human being suspended. And all around this human are these different animals, and they're little lines that link the human figures and the animal figures. And he explained to me that, you know, his friend Craig had shown him this image, and the image is about the connection between people and nature. And all of the little lines between the people and the animals in the Bushman's world are called the ropes to God. And I was just fascinated by this idea, because since I was a little kid, I've, you know, always felt at my most calm and my most alive when I'm outside, and whether that's underwater or in a forest. It's always had this very, very powerful impact on me. And Ross said, well, you know, you should come for a dive with Craig and I. And I went out one morning and I met them, and I was kind of nervous because we weren't going to wear wetsuits, and the water here is cold. And I've been diving here for a very long time, like since my very early 20s. And so I knew it was cold, and I really didn't know what to expect. And we just started walking along the beach, and from the very first 5 minutes, I realized that Craig was plugged into something that I'd never seen before. He was picking up signs in the environment that I would never notice. He was pointing out animals that I didn't even know existed. And then once we got into the water, we were just seeing incredible animal behaviors and able to get really, really close to animals in a way that completely surprised me. And not big, obvious animals like, you know, sharks or stingrays that I'd had experiences with, but small, subtle creatures that you wouldn't normally expect to be able to engage with at all. So it was probably about a year later that I went back to Craig, and I was very interested in learning about the cold water thermogenesis, which is adapting your body to the cold. And I was very interested in this technique that he'd taught himself, you know, having spent years in the Kalahari with the San Bushmen, he'd applied those principles of tracking to the underwater world, and I was fascinated by that. And I got into it, and after about 3 months, I'd adapted my body to the cold, and the first animal he taught me to track was an octopus. And 6 months into that process, we'd become quite good friends, and I suppose he realized that he could trust me, mm-hmm. And that I was competent in the water, and he'd, you know, I'd made a few short films. I'd never made a big film like this, but he obviously, he realized that, you know, he could see that what I could do, and he asked if I'd like to help him make this film.
It's interesting you use the word trust, because there is, it becomes very clear in the film, and it's even a point of discussion, is he feels very protective of this octopus. As you observed their relationship, how would you describe it, if you had to describe it for someone who was there and watched it?
So I wasn't there, and that's an important part of the story. By the time I started kind of working with Craig, the octopus had died quite a while before. But as you said, he was very protective of her, and he was very protective of the story in a way. As far as I understand, yeah, the only people who met the octopus were Craig, his wife Swati, his son Tom, and his friend Roger Horrocks, who also filmed her. So, you know, in all of those 6 months, he would tell me about brief experiences, but he never sat me down and told me the whole story. I think it was... So I can't say what I saw between the two of them in real life, but of course I've seen the footage, and I've spoken to him for thousands of hours about how the experience impacted him and what it meant to him. And
my apologies. I got my timeline completely mixed up. My apologies, Pippa.
No problem.
It's not so great. My guest is Pippa Ehrlich, co-director of My Octopus Teacher now on Netflix. For people who haven't seen the film, will you tell us a little bit about the environment in which the octopus lives?
Okay, so the octopus lives in the Great African Sea Forest, which is a kelp forest that runs kind of 1,000 kilometers from the edge of Cape Town all the way up the Namibian coastline. And it is this incredibly magical, three-dimensional underwater wonderland, and it really is like a forest, and you can literally fly through it, and you'll be surrounded by schools of fish the same way you'd be surrounded by flocks of birds in a rainforest. And it is home to thousands upon thousands upon thousands of creatures, thousands of species, and then also, you know, the abundance inside kelp forests, the numbers of animals is just astounding. And I think what I found really surprising is that 25% of the world's coastlines are kelp forest habitats, but hardly anyone speaks about them. And that's something I was really excited about as a filmmaker, was being able to showcase this incredible place to an audience that wouldn't have seen it before.
And as you mentioned, you went on dives with Craig in this area, and you had to acclimate to, there's no wetsuits and no oxygen tanks either, correct?
Correct.
This is a silly question, but I could not stop thinking about it watching the film. How long can Craig stay underwater?
If, you know, he can probably stay in the cold for an hour and a half, and he can probably, on land, I think he can hold his breath for about 6 minutes, and underwater he can probably hold his breath for two and a half minutes. But in a film, 30 seconds is a long shot.
Sure.
So if you can hold your breath for 2 minutes, you're doing pretty well. And also, it's not very deep. It's 10 meters at max.
My guest is Pippa Ehrlich, co-director of My Octopus Teacher. It was interesting that there wasn't ever... The octopus is referred to as the octopus. Did Craig ever name the octopus, or just refer to the octopus as the octopus?
He referred to her as his teacher, or a she, or her, or sometimes the octopus. He didn't. He kind of saw her as this wild creature, and he didn't want to make her something other than that by giving her a human name. And I guess he felt like that would have made her something that she wasn't. So that's why he never named her.
One of the things, Craig, you mentioned this in one of your answers, that he has learned to track. We learned this in the film earlier in his work as a filmmaker. What is the process of tracking marine life like?
So, tracking sounds like this magical process, and in some ways it is, in other ways it's actually just very, very practical nuts and bolts. And the first step is actually just learning what animals are in the environment, and learning to identify them. And then you start to pick up little signs, like an impression in the sand that might have a crab hiding underneath it. You can look at the shell of an animal and see the different bands of color. And then you can go backwards in time into the animal's life and see what that animal was eating during different phases. Because, when it's eating algae, its shell is brown, and when it's eating bacteria, its shell is blue, for example. And you start to compile all of these little facts and signs together, and then you get a really powerful impression of how the whole ecosystem functions as one. And you start to look at how animals are behaving, and that gives you a clue as to what other animals might be in the environment. Craig tells a story, for example, of swimming through the kelp forest and finding a huge stingray sheltering in the kelp leaves, and being very, very still, which is really unusual for stingrays. Normally they sit on the bottom if they're going to be still. And then the next minute he heard a shout, and a great white jumped a few hundred meters behind them, and the stingray was hiding. So you start to see things like that. You start to look at how a cat shark is moving along the bottom and pushing its nose into certain cracks, and then you realize it could be hunting an octopus.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. What did you love most about My Octopus Teacher? What part of the film made you cry or made you smile, and why? Do you have questions for Pippa Ehrlich, co-director of My Octopus Teacher, which you can watch on Netflix now, maybe about the filming process? Have you ever had this sort of relationship with a sea creature? Give us a call, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. We'll have more with Pippa Ehrlich after the break. This is All of It. This is All of It. My guest this hour is Pippa Ehrlich, co-director of My Octopus Teacher, nominated for Best Documentary Feature for the Academy Awards. And listeners, we want to hear from you. What did you get out of watching My Octopus Teacher? Perhaps you have a question for Pippa about the filming process. 646-435-7280. Pippa, the film is beautiful and emotional. It's sometimes really intense. There's this particularly intense moment when Craig witnesses a small pajama shark. I think it is looking for food, looking for the octopus to eat and chasing her. And he considers for a moment, he tells us he considers for a moment, trying to interfere, but realizes he really shouldn't. He shouldn't interfere with nature and its cycle. I'm curious, as you as a filmmaker, not as a conservationist, and are you glad he didn't intervene?
I don't actually have an opinion on that. And I think because it's a question that I've asked myself many, many times, and I don't know what I would have done in that situation. So I understand why Craig didn't intervene, because I've asked him about it, over and over again in the filmmaking process, and we asked him about it in the interview as well. And I know it's still something that he struggles with. I think he questions whether he should or he shouldn't have. And I'm not sure what the answer is. As someone who dives in the Kalk Forest every day and loves those animals very much, you know, the octopuses and the sharks. And in fact, you know, I was a shark conservationist for 4 years before I started working on this film.
Oh, interesting.
I really love pyjama sharks. I've had really incredible experiences with them. I've never got to know one specific animal like Craig did. But I respect his decision because every single animal in that kelp forest is very important and every single one of them is living a life that's full of drama and is facing trials and tribulations. And octopuses are vulnerable because they, you know, they're a shellless creature. They're completely defenseless apart from their incredibly sophisticated brains. Those sharks live for up to 35 years. You know, I think they have to get to their mid-teens, even early 20s, before they can start to reproduce. So they have very difficult lives as well. And there are far fewer of them than there are of octopuses. And the other really incredible thing about the relationship between the two is if it wasn't for the sharks, the octopus would never be so clever. You know, it's because it's had to outwit predators for so long that the octopuses have that the octopus has developed these incredibly sort of creative self-protection skills.
It's one of those moments in the film that is meaningful to your point about the first thing you said is I don't have an opinion on that. It is one of those moments that makes you think, like, what should happen in this moment? What do I think? What would I do if I were in this moment? That's one of the sort of, even though most of us will never be in that moment, it could be extrapolated to so many other things.
And it's a hard moment. It's probably the hardest, you know, and it's the question that's come up the most in comments from people who've seen the film. We've received many, many emails from people who are furious with Craig. Yeah, so it's been very interesting to see how people responded to that dilemma.
Let's take a couple of calls. We have Rita calling in from Santa Fe, New Mexico on line two. Hi, Rita. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, thank you. Allison, I love you. I just have to say that. You are the best. You're incredible. I had seen this. This is like the greatest documentary I think I've ever seen because it's not dry. And the emotional connection that Craig had with this octopus, I kept watching and I said to myself, if this man could marry this creature, he would. I mean, it was just so beautiful. I don't think a lot of human beings have that kind of emotional connection. There was no judgment. There was nothing. It was just pure love in, like, the best form. I don't know how else to express it, but it was so beautiful. And I probably would have screwed it up and killed the shark. but you know what? I can't be angry with him. He did the right thing. And she grew her leg back, so I was very happy.
I think the word pure is a really good descriptor. Thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to line six and talk to Tanya. Hi, Tanya. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. You know, just congratulations again. This is just a fabulous documentary. I told, you know, everyone about it when I saw it. And I was so touched and, you know, left speechless and in awe, you know, of the beauty and the diversity, you know, of the underwater world. What I'd like to know, Pippa, is when you think about the environmental causes and for, like, sea change, what is your hope, you know, for this movie in terms of changing the direction, you know, of, like, what's being done to damage, actually, the underwater life for animals such as the octopus?
That's a really great question. Thank you. You know, as you said, we're in a massive environmental crisis, and we are facing global climate change. We're facing the sixth great extinction, where species are disappearing at a rate that we've never seen in our time on Earth. And I think the scariest part of all of that is, in the long term, human beings will be able to count themselves amongst those species that are being wiped off the face of the earth. And that's a really, really frightening thing. And what I find quite hopeful is that for hundreds of thousands of years, human beings lived in a very, not just sustainable, but reciprocal way with the natural world. You know, in indigenous cultures knew how to work with nature. And it's only been for about 10,000 years that we've been settled in one place and not been hunter-gatherers anymore. And something shifted there in our minds. And I think that many of these terrifying environmental things that we are seeing today are really symptoms of this disconnection that happened somewhere along in our history. And what I really hope is that if people can spend some time and get themselves into places where they just start to think about nature again, not as something, you know, not as a resource to be used, but as something that's integrally important to us, to our minds and bodies and spirits, then I think we'll change our relationship with the natural world, and we'll change the way that we treat the natural world.
My guess is
Pippa Ehrlich. So that's what I'm hoping.
My guest is Pippa Ehrlich, co-director of My Octopus Teacher. We have a couple of filmmaking questions. Let's go to Daniel on line 7, calling in from Oakland, California. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi there. Sure. Thanks for taking my call. I absolutely loved the film. I saw it twice in a row. And it's really great to hear about the filmmaking, but I was a little confused about what the process was of actually getting the footage, because I understood the filmmaker to say that the octopus had already died when she met the people in the film.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Yeah, clarify the timeline for us.
So the octopus was around in 2015, 2016. And I started working with Craig in early 2017. So most of what we were working with was a big archive of footage that he had filmed himself when he was diving with her every day. And this is what Craig does. It's what he still does today, is every time he goes into the water, he takes his camera with him, you know, and he's a very good cinematographer, and he's been filming since he was a teenager. So, and he's mastered this incredible technique of holding his breath, and shooting mind-blowing animal behavior on very small portable cameras. So, yeah, it was kind of a filmmaking dream, because when I got there, and same for my co-director James, who came in later, all of the really difficult stuff to get was already in the can, and Craig never planned to make a film. He was just blown away by what he was seeing and really, really motivated to record it. And yeah, that's just what he does. That's what his life has been dedicated to now.
Thank you for calling in, Daniel. You know, part of this story is that Craig knows that this octopus will live only a little over a year. And we have a clip from the film about the death of the octopus. Let's take a listen to a clip from My Octopus Teacher.
I mean, in some crazy way, it was a relief. It was a relief because the intensity of going every day and tracking her and trying to capture it was tough in a way. I mean, I sort of slept, dreamt this animal. I was in my mind thinking like an octopus. It was also taxing in a way.
That's from My Octopus Teacher. This actually leads into a question we have from Rachel on, I believe it is line 4. Hi, Rachel. What did you want to ask Pippa Ehrlich, co-director of My Octopus Teacher?
Well, and it's interesting that you put that clip on as well, because I worked with children, many of whom were not going to live. So I worked in hospitals for years and worked. Even knowing that, and so the fact that he said it was almost a relief, it's true. But my question had to do with his mourning and his grieving, because I personally, I'm wondering how he got through that process, because for me, I was grieving for weeks, even though, like one caller said, the caller who asked that wonderful question about what do you hope other people will see, you know, will they get the idea of what's going on in the ocean? But I was telling everybody, you must see this. I need to prepare you. It's going to break your heart, but you must see this. But what was his grief period like? Or did it affect him as it would me, like a family member, or?
Mm-hmm. Pippa, what did you observe?
I mean, I wasn't there when she died, but he'd say things in the film, like, you know, like when she was injured, he's like, you know, that there was no octopus bit. If it was your child, you take him to the doctor. If it was your dog, you take it to the vet. But what do you do with an octopus? So I think when she died, his heart was broken and he missed her. But he'd also had some time to, you know, the relationship had started coming to an end a couple of months before when she laid her eggs. Because at that point, she just moved into the back of the den and she completely stopped engaging with him. So I think the grieving process for him actually started then. And he knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So he had some time to make peace with it, but I mean, you saw it still brings tears to his eyes. And he still goes back to that place. And every single time he swims over her den, he thinks about her.
The name of the film is My Octopus Teacher. It is on Netflix. It has won the BAFTA for Best Documentary, is nominated for the Best Documentary Feature Award for an Oscar. Pippa Ehrlich, thank you so much for being with us and taking calls from our listeners. We really appreciate it.
No problem.